and started, and I'm Natalie Peters on June 10th, right, 1994. I'm here with Dr. Philip Heumann. And Dr. Heumann, anywhere you want to start? You want to start with when you first moved here?
Well, then, actually, Uncle Sam sent me here. I came down here my junior year from the University of Michigan and was stationed at Edgewood Arsenal as one of the prospective officers. That time, Edgewood Arsenal, there was a field artillery unit there, and it was, wasn't called Edgewood Arsenal, it was called Fort Hoyle. And when I arrived back the next year after I'd spent the summer months here in training, the field artillery were moving out, taking the caissons and the horses, and then became known as Edgewood Arsenal, the chemical corps. That was 1940-41. And I remember training troops down there. This was right at the start of World War II. And first time I got acquainted with Bel Air was at the end of a hot hike up through a dirt road, which is now Emerton Road now. I guess it was called Emerton Road then also. But we marched from there and went up to the fairgrounds of the racetrack, and we camped there overnight. I had field kitchens and things, and we pitched our pup tents and stuff like that. So that was...
What do you remember about that trip up the marching up there?
Hot, dry. My throat was dry, but it was humid. And I don't know, Harford County is awful in the summer sometimes, especially if you're in the Army and you're down there in the swamp areas there in Edgewood doing things. But I decided it was a lovely place. Met my wife here then with a dance.
Tell me about that.
They had dances for the officers the officers to be. They were all college students in there, juniors or seniors, and they would have a dance on the weekend for us. And I
at Edgewood
Arsenal, yes. And that Marge, she's Marge Longley, Marjorie Longley. And she had another fellow, date with another fellow there, and I danced with her. And then a year later, when they shipped me back here, I remembered and asked around where the Longleys lived, so I went over and visited her in the daytime when I was, Wednesday afternoon, we always took off for sports or something. Mother was home and in the kitchen. Marge was at work, and Sister Helen was there. Mother called Helen, and Helen took me for a sailboat ride on the Bush River. So I got introduced all the way around to Harford County, and a lovely place. In fact, 2 years later, sometime that March, and I got married in 1942. They sent me overseas. They got back here, and it was a flip between whether I went into back to medical school again, which is after the year after I graduated from Michigan, as I stepped off of the platform for getting my diploma. There was a lieutenant colonel standing there that handed me an envelope that says, "You will report in 5 days to Edgewood Arsenal."
Was that a surprise to you?
Well, World War II was getting ready to start about that time, and of course, England and everything was in a war over there, but the United States wasn't. But they knew something was coming, and they were calling everyone up. There, at the time I arrived, there were only 99 officers in the chemical corps. And they came back here and trained troops at Edgewood Arsenal, and then after a year of dating Mars, we got married, and then we got shipped down to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Gadsden, Alabama. Trained troops there, and then they shipped out as S3 of the 96th Chemical Mortar Battalion went to Europe. Got back here, and Mars and I was trying to decide. She decided she'd work, and I should go back to med school, and then graduated and went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and Uncle Sam, a year later, sent me to Korea, and I got back from Korea.
You were still in the service all the time.
Yeah, and when I got back from Korea, Marge had looked around, and she decided she liked Bel Air. I found this house here, it belonged to the Holdens at that time, and she said, so this is where you're going to have your office. Converted the big double garage behind here into an office space, and I've been here, that was 1953, so I've been here about 41 years now. It's been some wonderful, I mean, we look around, you've seen so many people moving into Harford County, there's just any place like it.
What was it like when you first got here? How has it changed since then?
Oh, it was lovely then. Wide open places and beautiful big farms, and you see your cattle around, and just a nice rural county. I think there was something like 2,800 people in Bel Air when I settled down here. And I received a nice welcome from several of the doctors, Dr. Sidwell and Dr. Palmer, Dr. Horkey. In fact, Dr. Horkey took me up to the hospital and introduced me there and wanted me to settle down here and practice. And ended up settling here. Just had a great time here. Just been involved in different things in the Bel Air United Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. And so we got married in Aberdeen, the Presbyterian Church, but then after being through the service and Korea and World War II, we came back here, and then I went to Korea, and then when I came back from Korea, we settled in Bel Air, and we decided on the Bel Air United Methodist Church.
When you first started, were most of your patients farmers?
No, I've been paid off many a time, and not paid off all the time. Many of my patients would bring me fruit and vegetables and things, just like you saw Mrs. Ward just dropped us off a bunch of asparagus. At that time, you don't see much of it now. I would say 30% of my practice was house calls, home calls.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. The family, you had bigger families. You had one car families. You had people that, you either saw them at night when the husband was home, or you made house calls. Some of them had transportation, if you get transportation, especially if they're local.
Tell me about some of those house calls. Are there any that stand out in your mind?
I did something I don't do very much of now. I did home deliveries, until I stopped it, I was doing about 100 deliveries a year, and most of them I did at Harper Memorial Hospital. I'd say maybe 10, 12 of them a year would be home deliveries. I remember Dr. Palmer came dashing to me one afternoon. I was just finishing up the morning hours. He comes in, he has a big list of papers. He says, Phil, it's his wife and I are going to take a vacation here for 3 weeks. And he says, I've got 10 patients that might deliver. And I brought this list over, and I thought maybe you'd cover for me while I was gone. I delivered 7 of them while he was gone. And at that time, I didn't know of a place called The Forest. And it's down here beyond Churchville area there. called the Forest. They had a gravel pit and down in there. And I remember that I'd never seen the patient before, and he called me. She was in labor. I went down to deliver her, and the reason I remember her in particular is, you know, usually when you go in labor, you have abdominal cramping and like that. She had none of this. Her legs, all the way down her legs, were cramping severely. Well, I arrived there. I had no idea what was causing the leg cramps, and so she informed me, well, I don't have cramps in my abdomen when I'm going to have a baby. I have leg cramps. So everything went normally, but it was just unusual to have one. And then, don't see much of it now. I wouldn't be called now, but the ambulance crew had called and gotten there and met them someplace and finished delivering the baby, or now they're all well trained, and I don't know if that happens anymore, or maybe getting a little smarter and they get there sooner on time. But she didn't have a lot of OBGYN specialists that when I first started out here, most of the deliveries were done by general practitioners.
And you were a general practitioner?
Yes, I still am. Mm-hmm. But, it has been nice to go on and specialize in something, but I've been very happy with what I've done.
In this community, didn't you find your general practice to be
very rewarding? Yeah, we worked in the Heart Association. In fact, I was president of a couple of years, and we worked up a very nice program when I was there on stroke patients. I don't think it's in effect anymore because the nurses that went away and took the train just set it up for when patients came home from the hospital after they had the stroke. Why the nurses would go out and help instruct the family in the care of the patient, and also to see to it that so many of the families, stroke patients never got any better because the family did everything for them. They didn't let train or let the patient do the thing. So and it worked out very nicely. And a couple of the specialists from Baltimore would come out and evaluate the patients and set up the training program. And it's, I don't know, I used it a lot. I think some of the other doctors did too. I don't know, some of them didn't approve of it, to having a specialist or someone do this, but some of them availed themselves, some didn't.
Tell me how medical treatment in this area has changed since you were first here. Has it changed?
Oh, you did things then that you wouldn't even think of doing now.
Like what kinds of things?
Well, things that are... We didn't have OSHA with all the regulations and the way you handle or treat things. And I'm not saying that's not a good thing to have, but when you suture or set bones in the office, I mean, with malpractice and everything like that, you couldn't think of doing these things now. But I'm sure it saved some lives and everything, because now you call the ambulance and they're there, and then maybe they sit out in the front of your office for an hour stabilizing the patient before they get them to the hospital. And you also now have two excellent hospitals here. Before we had one just in Havre de Grace, and now except when they're filled, you have a very quick access for any patient in any condition. Well, I think the facility is a lot better. It was a real hectic time there when the county suddenly just seemed like it boomed as a more, what would you call it, a bedroom county or something like that, because everyone started moving up here. And then we had very few physicians, very few specialists, maybe one, two physician, GYN man, maybe one psychiatrist, four or five surgeons, some internists. I don't remember any that were specific as cardiologists or like that. Now we have everything up here, and experts. I mean, and many of them even commute up here from Hopkins University or live up here. And it's a beautiful county to live in, I think. The facilities here are excellent.
When was that big boom when it seemed that the population suddenly increased on that?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Right here in 53. I must have started in the 60s. Let's see, when we had a big snowstorm? 58.
Uh-huh.
You remember? You don't remember. You wouldn't remember that, uh-huh. No.
Tell me about that. We
must have had 4 feet of snow, and then on top of that, it drifted. And I remember I got a call from a patient who was a hemophiliac, lived at the top hill coming up there. I came off the 80 road, and the county was out there at that time trying to get it through. And I took my bag and climbed, well, it seemed like about 2 blocks from me through the snow up to his home. And there's this man who was a carpenter had been working, and they started to hemorrhage, and hemophilia, the blood doesn't clot. And so anyway, he's in bed, and I came in to see him. He was my patient. I think Dr. Barcelli saw him most of the time. I of course couldn't move him, and I never sit on the bed when I go there. I always take a chair and sit there, but I couldn't get there to examine the patient. And I remember sitting down on the bed, and all of a sudden the whole bed and everything collapsed to the floor. Well, we couldn't move him, so he spent the next 2.5 weeks there in bed flat on the floor because of until we got the bleeding and stuff slowed down. Dr. Hudson was quite a institution around here at that time. Of course, I arrived right after the war, but during the war, he had a big house down here on Route 22 on the way on Fountain Green Road. The house has just been torn down. I don't know if they're building some sort of complex there now, but he did a lot of deliveries there. Very active person.
Tell me about
Dr. Hudson. Well, he took Dr. Barcell in with him. And when I'd meet him mostly, it would be sometimes he'd show up at 1 o'clock in the morning after our office hours, seeing a sick patient, and they got tired of waiting for one of us, called the other, and we both arrived there to see the same patient at the same time. And then we did deliveries at hospital. I remember one time I was over there, and I think it was 3 or 4 years after I was getting started, and I was doing deliveries, and of course the place was growing, and there was too much to do and not enough of us to do it. And I'm sitting there waiting by the we're both waiting for our patients to start to deliver, and we were sitting there on our bunk talking, and he says, young man, he says, you're building yourself a Frankenstein, just like I have. I says, well, what do you do about it? He says, you just keep seeing patients. And I laughed at him. And Nick Normus was there at the hospital also. He was came up, and he was here before I arrived, and he went into OBGYN at that time from general practice. That's about the time I got real interested in Gene Kraft, Maryland Gene Kraft. There was a place over there while we were waiting some nights. We'd call down and they'd send up, you'd order steamed crabs and maybe order six piece. He paid $1 a piece for them then. Well, normally I was 10.58 that were very, very reasonable. They didn't pay $25 a dozen. It was more like $8, $10, $12 a dozen. And so you got a real good size crab, you know. It wasn't these 5 to 6 inches,
yeah,
and
right.
They were heavy. And so we'd put their neat things. Dr. Harkey loved steamed crabs, sometimes after he'd leave the hospital, we'd stop at Ralph's place and go in. Even in the wintertime, he'd have steamed crabs in the refrigerator or frozen. They'd haul them out, and he'd sit there and have a beer and eat steamed crabs with him. He was very busy. I remember when I first arrived and we moved into the house. We didn't have a whole lot of furniture. And I'd been down to Dr. Horty's, and he said, "Now you'll need such and such and such and such to use in your office. So you take these biologicals up to smallpox and tetanus shots and like that." And he says, "Take them, put in your refrigerator, and I'll tell the detail man to start stopping and see you so that you can order what you need." Gave me syringes and so forth to use. And I'm coming back, and I just walked in the house. The door opening up, and here this lady and the son comes up, and he ran a nail in his foot. And Dr. Hartsby says, "Oh, don't come down and see me. You got a new doctor in Bel Air." That was Clark Hoover. And Mrs. Hoover ran a little hobby shop down here across from where the Oldsmobile place used to be there on Cortland.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, he was running at that time. Anyway, she says, "Dr. Torkey tells me I'm to come and see you. This is Alma Hoover," she says. And Clark here stepped on a nail. He says, "She would just be walking in the door about now with the medicine I needed to get." So that was my first patient that I ever saw here.
Did you see them on the front stoop, or did you take them?
Oh, no, I brought them in. We had a little bit of... took them in the kitchen table and got the things out of the refrigerator. Now you're not allowed to keep anything but your regular things in the refrigerator. You don't use it jointly for anything. But that got me started, and I thought, we were going to remodel it. We had the double doors taken off of the garage out here, and I poured the concrete slabs and put the heater system and everything in. But I arrived here in June, and then I got this call from Dr. Manera's friend. I can't even remember the name of the little town. Over above Jarrettsville, and some friends of my wife's parents knew this gentleman, and he says Dr. France hadn't had a vacation in 18 years. He's a general practitioner, and he wanted me to, and wondered if I would be willing to come over and live in his home so they could have vacation. So Mars and I went over with our two small youngsters we had. Patty had been born while I was in Korea, and we had Craig, who was a year and a half older than me. And we went up there, lived in their home for a month, and he showed me how to, he had his own x-ray machine and everything there. So I'm
2 days with him, and then he took off on his vacation. And he had his office in his basement, and it was just a huge basement, and it was over one end. And it was just lined with chairs, and I didn't wonder what it was. But anyway, these 60 patients in there, and it'd be full in the morning, and then he'd go make house calls in the afternoon after seeing them, and it'd be filled up when he got back at 6 o'clock and work until about midnight again. It's a good thing I'd had all the experience in Korea of seeing all the soldiers coming into my medical company. And, so I handled it, but I'm sure not anything like he would have had it. But you took your own x-rays, you set your own broken arms, and very few patients went to the hospital. And
how did you decide, or how did you and the patients decide what the fee was if they weren't paying in money? They were paying in produce.
Oh, no, they didn't pay in produce. No, I mean, if they didn't have, sometimes they'd say, come in and say they just couldn't pay, mm-hmm. and then wouldn't want to know if I would accept things. And you did. That didn't last long. I mean, it's become more and more commercial and industrial around here. And of course, the type of people had the commuters and the people that were
So tell me about some of your patients. Who do you remember the most? Anybody?
Larry McPhail would be one of them I remember. He was a real character. But I'll say this for him. If he was a friend of yours and he liked you, he'd back you up on anything. He had the strangest, he had a red-hot temper, but he liked to talk. I mean, when he liked to emphasize it. And he'd be there. If you remember that story about him supposedly hitting a telephone operator or something here, well, I've thought about it many times, and after talking to him and hearing him get excited and emphasizing something, I don't think he did. I think it's just Larry. He had a habit of emphasizing how he hit you on it. In fact, after sitting having a discussion with him, I'd go home and my shoulder would be sore because he kept punching me in the arm saying, now this, and really he was just excited and talking about something. He was a real nice personality. I enjoyed him. He took me to see things that I wouldn't have seen. Introduced me to football players, basketball players, baseball players that he knew, his personal friends that he had trained when he was manager of the New York Yankees.
And, like him?
Oh. I met Mickey Mantle and Pee Wee Reese and I don't know, quite a few of them. Then just a nice little rural. Oh, I remember during that snowstorm we were talking about in 58. Of course, I went back here long from Korea, but I got this phone call that this patient was hemorrhaging up above Jarrettsville. Well, nothing could get through any place, and I was notified by they called the state police, and they notified me that the Army had a big Sikorsky chopper up here that we could use for emergencies. So they said they'd meet me over here at John Carroll School where they could land in the big field out there. So I got over there. The snow crews had gotten next there. Took my bag and we went over there and got on this Sikorsky. And the ice technologist says, well, what do you think of this? And I said, oh, that's fine. He says, what do you mean it's fine? I says, well, he says, you have to realize I was in Korea and I threw many a patient back to MASH on the front lines. It was too critical to send back. We took them back by chopper. And I says, believe it or not, I loaded and saw the front lines with 20,000 wounded American soldiers on a chopper to send them back to MASH. So anyway, he flew me up above Jarrettsville, and they had put a make on the field and about 3 feet of snow. And the flyer got out with me, and he says, well, you're going to have help. And he had a stretcher and everything there. And we went into the farmhouse and picked the lady up and wrapped her in blankets. And this was about a good 250-300 feet away from us, and we had to walk through this 3 feet of snow, and we loaded the patient, and then we called in to Harper Memorial Hospital, and they said, well, we've got a place being in over at the high school field, and we can get there with an ambulance. So we landed there, and then he brought me back over here to John Carroll, and worked out fine. Patient did well, but it's just amazing what our community can do when it's when there's an emergency and you need something. After that, when I realized you could get stuck or anything, I always used to carry a big sleeping bag in the trunk of my car, because when I went on these calls, if I got stuck someplace, I wanted to be warm. Never had any problems. Always got. Then it was Dr. Palmer, after he had that one thing, he comes over and he says, I understand you did the graveyard registration while you were in Korea. And I said, yes. And he says, well, we're getting too busy here. I'm medical examiner for Harford County. He asked me to be, if I wouldn't work with him. So I worked with him. And he couldn't take it, he'd call me, and I'd go on a call because office might be too full to leave it. He went out on death, an automobile, or suicide, anything like that. You had to go. The body couldn't be moved until the medical examiner saw it. And, one case I remember was Dr. Palmer just died. He was over his place on East Shore, and he was putting a new pipe through the side of the room to put in a stove there so he could use in the wintertime as a summer place. And he,
I have to leave you two. I have an appointment. And
I'll tell you a lot more about this. He was born in Harford County.
We'll have to come back another time. Mm-hmm.
But
so he was putting his pipe in.
And anyway, he had a heart attack. Well, he came in and sat down, and he told his wife he was not feeling good. And he'd been rasping it out. Anyway, he sat down. She came back in out of the kitchen. And he was dead sitting in his chair. So that made me chief medical examiner, and my first patient after, or my first victim after that, was I got a phone call middle of the night, and the Rhett Brown trial was on here in Harford County at that time. And at that time, the police were watching every entrance and exit into Bel Air, because the trial was at the courthouse, and they heard something was going to happen. Well,
what was the trial again? The name of
Rhett Brown. Oh. Rhett Brown. And anyway, I get this phone call, and they said, will you come out here to the Tollgate House? It's on Tollgate Road, where the racetrack was. Right in the corner, there was a stone house. And so I went out there, and here the troopers had followed a car that came in off of Churchville Road, I believe it was. Came into town, they followed it up past the courthouse with troopers right behind the car. And it didn't stop. And slowed down. But anyway, went on down and started out Route 1 and got to the Colgate house and they slammed the brakes on. And the car blew up. They had a fulminate of mercury bomb in it. And while I got there, they recovered a foot and a leg from the Tollgate house that had blown out of the car over there and pieces here. We put them all together and sent them to state medical examiner. But they said they're sure that they were going to blow up the courthouse, and they had rumors to this effect. After that, the trial was transferred someplace else out of Bel Air. I don't remember where it went to. Just been little things like that happen.
Well, what else do you remember about your time here? What other little things? These are great. Just what I want to hear about.
Talk about, you want about different patients? Well, I hope this didn't happen to many little boys. I had a mother come screaming into the office early morning. It was time to be at school. And she comes in, and the little boy is just screaming and hollering. And she, in her endeavors to dress him to get to the school bus, had zipped his trousers up, and the zipper cut the penis underneath side of his penis and zipped it all the way up in the zipper. And she tried to run the zipper back down, couldn't get down, and he's screaming and hollering, he didn't want anyone to touch him. And so he came up there, and I said, "No, Mother isn't going to like what I'm going to do, because but it won't hurt you, and it'll feel a lot better." And I said, "Can you sit still?" So he looked at me, and I guess he trusted me. So I took my scissors and went down below the bottom part of the zipper, just cut it in two. And of course, it just falls apart. And boy, was he was a pleased, happy little kid. Then another thing. I never saw this patient. I had a young chap came in. He received for his birthday a motorcycle, and he's out running around the field and everything. And he went through a barbed wire fence. Of course, he had huge lacerations on his body and the arms and legs. And I just scrubbed up and got him cleaned up, and I put 158 sutures in. Anyway, this is. Day it was one of my nurses at the time, and she asked me to take the phone. I said, "Well, I'm scrubbed. I can't on break technique." "Well, this lady says you have to make an emergency house call." And I said, "Well, I said I just can't break it. It's going to take me a while." So about just held the phone over to me, and she said, "I told the lady what's doing well." 20 minutes later, she calls back and she says, "Well, where's the doctor?" And he says, "Well," I said, "I'm only going to be at least another half hour." I said, "Well, anyway," she waited a while, called me back again. Nurse picked up the phone and said, "Well," the lady was very indignant. She says, "Well, I have a hairdresser's appointment and I can't miss it. Well, you just tell the doctor to not bother coming." So I never did see that emergency hospital. But and there's little funny little things like that. And another time, I'm speaking of these things that always happen to kids in the morning. His mother came rushing in with a little girl. She said, "I was combing her hair," and I said, "She put her barrette in her mouth
And the guy got the plus in the corner here, and she swallowed the barrette. And she comes in hemorrhaging from the mouth, and the child just wouldn't scream and writhing. You couldn't do anything. About that time, the child passes out, and we open her mouth, and we could see the barrette, the closed end, the half end down, and then the prongs were open, and it just couldn't get back up. And, you know, so my mother held the child, and I got a couple of Kelly clamps, and grabbed it, closed it, and pulled it out. I think, talking about those things, though, I remember I was talking to Dr. Palmer, and he was saying, he says, oh, you got to do lots of things sometimes. He says, the ambulance crew brought this youngster in from school where he's been hit on the throat and collapsed the trachea. And they're in the ambulance, he's going to the hospital with him. Well, he stopped breathing, he couldn't get his breath. And Dr. Palmer took out his pocket knife and cut the throat open here and went into the trachea and took that time the pens all screwed apart. The one we didn't have, and he took the pen and put it in and opened it, and the guy lived.
You must have had that kind of experience in Korea.
I saw that all the time. I don't even like to talk about Korea. I just, with all this coming about D-Day and everything, just brings back too many awful memories.
So what were some of your good memories of Harford
County since you've gotten here? Some of the best things that happened to me.
Meeting my
wife. And her deciding that I should go to med school instead of staying in the regular army. And everyone's been wonderful, and Dr. Horky started me off, and then all the other doctors have been great. And I remember when we first went in here, I went up to the Commercial Bank and went in to see the president of the bank and whether I could get a loan to Gwen Holden and Gene Holden. And then this place where we live right here was built by Mr. Kunkel, and then he sold it to Holden during the war. When I got back here, Holden bought their place out here and further in the country, and we're trying to sell this, so we bought it from the Holden. And I went up there to and was trying to get a loan. Of course, they didn't know me from Adam. I'm just starting in. I don't have a job. I don't have that much money either. And and see, Lloyd Richmond had played baseball with my father-in-law, and he knew my grandfather was a stockholder in the Commercial Bank. And I'm saying that he says, well, let's see, so William B. Longley is your father-in-law and grandfather-in-law, and I said, yes. He says, there won't be any problem. I got my loan and built this. So I practiced here in my living room. We had a little bit of furniture, old sofa and some chairs, and my father's friend, the doctor, was killed in Korea, and his equipment, their family gave to my dad, and he brought it down here, and I had an examining table and a chair and a light and some other pieces, all in old white enamel, nothing like the modern things you have now. But when I got started, we decided, since I wasn't going to be able to get in the office over there until December, why I would see patients here. So we lived in the rest of the house, and we had doors here on this one thing, and we would have the patients sit in the living room, and then I'd come in here and I would examine the patients here. Of course, I had these windows and everything were all closed off. But this shows you can practice any place if you want to.
Getting started from the ground up.
Then when we met a lot of wonderful people here and through the church and like that. The Cronin, Mr. Cronin, and I got to be very good friends.
What are some of the biggest changes you've seen?
Oh. Well, the first one I would say was when I was at Edward Arsenal, we hiked up Emerton Road, which is dirt. And you no longer have the fairgrounds, the racetrack, I miss that. I remember I went to Dr. Palmer again, comes over and he says, I'm the racetrack physician, Phil. And he says, I can't cover it every day during race. How about alternate when you take every other day and I'll take every other day. We've got long time, so I says, sure. So I go out in the afternoon and be the racetrack physician. They'd bring jockeys, and or someone had a heart attack, something they brought to you and you sent them away in an ambulance or something. But I remember this one time, wife said she was going to come down and go up there, and she went in to sit in with Mrs. Bond in her box there. They were involved in the racing business somehow or other. Anyway, I had no one was in the thing. I left the nurse there, and I slipped up to say hi to her. On the way up, I bought myself a $2 ticket on the race, and which was a 5-furlong race, and I bet on a horse called Dr. Leo. Well, Dr. Leo was 100-1. Well, I bet on because it says Dr. Leo thing. Well, I stopped up, saw Marge and Mrs. Vaughn, and they saw I had a ticket. What'd you bet on? I said, Dr. Leo. Is that plug? He's 100-1. I said, I know, but his name's Dr. Leo. So anyway, I went back down. Dr. Leo started off, and as he came around the last bend, and he took off and looked like he was jet propelled and won by 7 legs. So I got, I forget how much it was. I got around $200 anyway, $190. Anyway, I went up. They all said to me, says, why didn't you bet more? And I said, bet more is you give me help or I bet $2. So I split it with her, only I didn't give it even. I think I got some of that. She said, that's no split. I said, do your own bet. But I enjoyed that. I didn't normally bet on races, but none of the jockeys would ever get you a steer on anything. It's not legal, of course.
What were they like as patients? The jockeys?
A lot of them were superstitious as well. Get out. You couldn't believe the little things that they'd want to do it only a certain way, and they come in with little things that you couldn't understand normal person, but they're worried about it. And
like what kind of things?
They're very, very stoic. I mean, they would fall and come in, and they were very easy to work with, better than the average. I don't know if it's because they have a higher pain threshold or they're just used to falling and in the rough. But you get seen horses that have to be killed out there because the legs broke, and you see, get jockeys in all banged up. But they were nice to work with and very appreciative to have you there to see them and do something for them. Of course, they came first, and anyone that had an accident or anything, and they up in the stands or had problems like you saw. Anything from sunburns to heart attacks.
Couldn't you sign a jockey off if you thought he was too hurt to race? Were you in a position?
Oh, yes, you just told me through.
And so do you think part of their attitude might have been that they didn't want you to sign them off?
I didn't know about that. But then they used you as their physician, too, because some of them would be on medications or something for a cold or like that. They would come in and see you, or maybe they're being treated for blood pressure or something.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any stories about treating the doctor? What kind of superstitions? Do you remember any of those superstitions?
Funny little thing about the some. I'm trying to remember what it was, but some. Well, that's how I found out the superstition. They come in, they have to take the jockey uniform on. Well, someone would have some little thing, like, I remember one had a rabbit's foot and like that, but the clothing they were, the last time they had won a race, they were wearing such and such underwear, and they'd tell you this, why they had it on. Just typical of any person, you get a little, someone hadn't shaved before they won a baseball game, so they don't shave, some coach is coaching a football game, and he has a certain clothes on and he wins, so he wears that every time, or a certain hat. People, I think, are just general that way. A lot of patients are that way. I don't know what more I'm going to say.
Well, do you remember any other changes other than the roads, which is obviously a big one?
We talked about that already, about the fields and the open fields and like that. Shouldn't mention, I guess, that monstrosity of a garage we have built there now. And, of course, the band, the library wasn't there, and the big band place where they, I think the Holdens gave that property to the county. And we see just highways. You go out and you get completely lost now. As I said, 2,800 people. How many thousands we got around here now? Maybe we had 10 doctors that time. How many doctors we have? 100 and some now. It's just. The answer is people. I love this little quiet rural community. It's a beautiful place. And now, you go out and you go into like the kids would go down here in a little stream. They went gigging for frogs or shot them with a .22 or BB guns, and they would go over up into Mr. Memory's forgetting. Anyway, they'd go in, the farmer would show them in, show them the cows, and let them come over and sit around. You could go any place here, and practically there would be a field where you could play ball in, just like a scrub game up. What would you do? There's just nothing around here like that. There's no longer. You dash down to the river. It was clean enough then. You could see the bottom, and you could see
the little pools of clear white sand and stone, and the little fish over in the perch or bluegills, and they're laying eggs. And now we call it Muddy River, and it's too contaminated to go swimming in. I'm telling you what gives us clean, beautiful. The streams are all clear, and we don't have this now. They're loaded with chemicals and mud and fertilizer, and but you have people and they have to live someplace. I'm not complaining about this, but this is a change, and it's changed because of all changes because of population. But there are a lot of good changes. I mean, not the schools, they've built beautiful schools and lovely churches. A lot of nice facilities, a lot of little programs. Like you can go out and you see all these little kids playing t-ball, and then some on the baseball teams. Down here where my grandson goes to school, an elementary school, the principal talked to the kids and said, "Old Post Road needs some computers, and we'd like to send up a computer room thing for them." And he says, "We need $10,000. You kids want to save pennies, and if we can get 10,000 pennies, well, the kids have saved." And I know they got every penny that we had in the house, and I imagine some of the places around here are having trouble getting pennies because they. But anyway, they reached the $10,000, and now on the 16th of this month, he's going to kiss a pig, but he promised them too if they'd. And the kids, I wouldn't know this except I stopped down there, and there's a letter from the principal saying, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to kiss the pig 2 days because there isn't room enough for all the kids to get there at one time, so we'll have two assemblies on the 16th. So he's going to have to kiss the pig. I hope it's a little pet pig that's real clean that someone can bring in for him to kiss. But
he's probably happy to kiss it twice if he really got his 10,000 on the computer.
And then I think the schools are pretty nice here. I don't think we have as much involvement in drugs as other places. A lot of opportunities.
What else do you remember about your early times here? Do you remember the railroad? Was the Ma-and-Pa still here?
Oh, yes. Ma-and-Pa was still here. Have you ever ridden on it?
No.
All right. Well, all the track and everything was there at that time. And in fact, one of my best friends, John Kendall, wrote a little book on this. And John, incidentally, was what do you call these things that I'm supposed to be?
Living treasure.
Living treasure, yeah. Anyway, John, very wonderful person. He loved to paint. He did a lot of volunteer work and worked with children and the Boy Scouts. He got the idea that he wanted to commemorate the Ma-and-Pa Railroad. So he went around. I don't know if I have any of them here. I had some of them over in my office. A lot of my patients were artists, and I have all the pictures in my waiting room in the hallway are local, done by local artists, plus my daughter who went to fine arts school. So I have this book and a lot of these pictures that John went around to every one of the stations, Forest Hill, Bel Air, Falston, and painted all pictures of all of these and wrote up and
told about the engines, located some of the engines that used to run on that and the cars, and wrote the whole history of the monopod. And we now have some trails that, and we have one street named after it here, off of Moores Mill Road. It's called Monopod Road. You know where it is? Mm-hmm. And of course, seems like someone made a bid on it and went through there and took all the chestnut ties and took the railing up and everything. I don't know what they did with this, but they did something with the lumber. You know, if you don't really haven't thought a long time about this, it's difficult to say. But I'd say a lot of the things have been very good about it.
Your wife. Do you remember any other things about your patients when you, your early patients, and when you're first getting started here?
Oh. Which is why I was, a lot of them are about OB patients, obstetrics. I got this phone call one morning about 3 o'clock in the morning, and said on the phone, "Where are you?" And I said, "What do you mean, where am I?" And he says, "My wife sent you a card." And she said, "She did?" And he says, "Yes." And I said, "Well, I don't get the mail until 11 o'clock in the morning." And I said, "What did the card say?" And I said, "Well, you know." I said, "Is your wife pregnant?" "Yes." "Has she gone into labor?" "Yes." Well, in the meantime, Mars is awakened, and she's just all, she couldn't wait till the next morning. Sure enough, I went out. I got there just as the child was delivering and tied the cord and picked out the birth certificate and everything. Incidentally, I never got paid for that either. But sure enough, he waited. I've always been sorry we didn't save it. But anyway, there was a card that said the lady said she was from West Virginia. And what was clear, what she meant by it, was that she was, they didn't like to discuss it, such a thing as labor. I don't know why there was, but anyway, she had gone into labor and wanted to tell me that I should come and help her. I don't know how she thought of, but I guess that's not different, because my wife was born in a little bungalow, which I since bought and remodeled. My son's living in it now, down on Bush River. It's Long Bar Harbor, and she was delivered in this little house, and Dr. Page, when she started in labor, they called him. He's in Baltimore, and he got on the Singerly Local, which is a little local train that ran from Baltimore up to up above Avery, it went all the way up to
Elton.
Anyway, I incidentally rode that train every morning when I was going to med school after I got back here from World War II. Mars went to work, and at Edward Arsenal, secretary to General Louth, and I commuted on the Singerly Local, which is much like the Bomb Pow, as we'll say.
You're talking about when your wife was born?
Oh, well, she was born delivered by Dr. Page. He came up on this, and lived in this house. That's why I bought the house. It is sitting there just in ruin, and no one was taking care of it. She hated to see her. She was bored to see that. So we bought it and remodeled it. Been very nice to have, but that's something we need to. The roads weren't very good in those days. You didn't have Route 40 and all of these wonderful things. Now you've got Route 24 coming through here. It's a good thing they put that in there. There's just so much traffic around here. You surely know that. I mean, it's bumper to bumper traffic. It's not a pleasure to drive around here. You used to be able to go out, maybe meet one or two cars on the way, and I can remember. One of the times you get so tired working. I remember one time I'd just gotten home from delivering the baby, and I got this phone call, and I was just sound asleep, and I got up, and I dashed downstairs because I was going out on this call, and I climbed in the car, and there's no steering wheel there. I climbed in the rear seat. It finally dawned on me, you stupid fool, you're sitting in the back seat. Got us in front of the seat, made my house call. But, I mean, you do so many foolish things there. Another time you got me to think about this. Now, another time I got this phone call. Usually I could get a phone call and get out of bed, go make the emergency call, or go to the hospital, deliver the baby, come back and get in bed. Myers never knew I was even gone. Then she'd wonder why I was having trouble getting up in the morning. Well, this one time I got this emergency phone call, and I'm sitting on a bed. I got my leg crossed with a sock halfway on. Well, I awake and she feels something not normal there, evidently. But anyway, she says, "What are you doing sitting up on the bed?" I said, "Oh." She says, "I'm going to an emergency house call." She says, "Where are you going?" She says, "I don't know. I can't remember." They'll call back. Sure enough, I laid down and phone rang again. I says, sorry, I fell back to sleep. I'll be right there. But I mean, you do stupid things like that all the time. You get too tired. But now I think it's much better off. Plus, we couldn't have no. Our modern population, with the hospital facilities. We have a new Harper Memorial Hospital, a huge unit, beautiful. And they built Boston Hospital.
Did you encounter any more of those cultural differences, like the woman from West Virginia who thought she should send you a note to invite you to come to work?
No, that's not right. You should. I remember when I was amused when I first came. I started seeing patients. They'd come in, and I'd say, "Oh, you're not from around here?" "No, we moved up from Galax, Virginia." And then everyone would tell me what a wonderful place Galax, Virginia was. And finally, I started asking a few of them, "Well, if Galax is such a wonderful place, why did you move up here to Harford County?" They said, "It's a beautiful place too." I'm trying to think of the name of a farmer out here, but that was so nice to the kids and everything, but I can't come up with his name. Reedy. The Reedy Farm. And it's all huge development out here, but that just all beautiful open fields going well. He was the one that was so nice with kids. He came up from West Virginia too. West by God, Virginia, he said. But he wrote up his life history.
fascinating. Told how he started out down there, and then taught school and came up here and went into farming and bought the property here and finally ended up with the, like nice reading about someone that.
Did that get published?
No.
Where is it?
As far as I know, his daughter has it. I've thought about it. I remember I was so impressed with it, I told my family minister about it, and he says, I'd love to read it, so he read it too.
What is her name? Reedy's daughter's name?
Trying to think what his name is. Call me over his office, so
okay.
Look it up over there. But
that would be an interesting thing to see. I'd like to see that too.
Yeah, and see if she has it.
Yeah.
And it tells about his life there and coming up here, how he's adjusted and what he did. And that'd really be nice
that
to have.
Yeah, he's dead now, I guess.
Yes, he's.
And what was his church name? You don't remember.
I've seen so many of them.
I've
everything. And like, if I sat down and you could have time to think about it, I'm sure I could come up with it. There's probably a lot of things I'm not even thinking. And some of the things are just because of the sadness and everything about it. Just like to not mention, remember.
What are you thinking about now? That one gave you a smile, so that can't be one of the sad ones.
No, but Marge was very active in elementary school over here. They used to have little get-together where they'd always have a basket of fruit or groceries and stuff like that that they would auction off, or an auction off, you'd have a drawing, and many times they'd have a big jar of beans up there, and whoever guessed the closest to the number of beans in this jar would win the thing. Well, when I first started out here, we didn't have pharmacies that stayed open at night. You worked until midnight, so I carried many of my own drugs and everything, tablets, injectables, liquids. You don't do this anymore. But anyway, I was used to having all sorts of sizes of jars with pills of different sizes in there. So when I'd go over there, I'd put a guess in. I wanted 2 years in a row because I just used to knowing how many tablets were in it. Well, anyway, the third year, my wife wouldn't let me even guess. No way you're going to do that again. I'm embarrassed already. But she was very active in it, see? Much more so than I was so busy I didn't have time to do it. I worked days and nights. Dr. Sidwell did, Dr. Hudson did. Dr. Barthel, Dr. Palmer. I think of some of the others around here. Dr. Stonecipher. I don't think I could ask for anything to be any nicer. I mean, it's an opportunity to. Well, I send patients up into specialists in Baltimore, and I'd get letters back, and they'd say to me, where do you get all these wonderful patients? And they'd say, you got the loveliest people up there. And of course, when you think about it, I guess I do. They're just a different type of people, more family people, and just. Well, they notice the difference, and I think that's what makes Harford County what it is. And I think you have a lot more family life up here, and people do everything together. Like we have a
the wives got together and figured out we ought to have a block party. Well, the town would, when we have it scheduled, the town would send over their crews and put horses across both ends of Webster Street here, and one day in June or July we would have a block party, and all the neighbors get there, everyone brings a dish, and you have big tables out, and we now have it on our side yard here, because one July it was so hot, must have been 120 degrees on that flex, the cattle would drive there, and everyone was wringing wet and hot, and my wife says, let's pick these tables up, and we picked them up, came over here to the side yard, and since then it's always been that side yard. So we have a nice little community, and a lot of lovely people here, and they all like to get together. It's just a nice place to live.
It seems like a really
And I'm from Indiana.
That seems like a really great place to stop.